Nehemiah chapter 2 is where we are. We're studying through the book of Nehemiah. It's in the Old Testament. And if you need to know the page number, look at your table of contents in the Bible or the Bible in the rack in front of you. And you can look it up and find it. So Nehemiah chapter 2. Someone has said, ideals and dreams are like the stars. We never reach them, but we chart our course by them. And if you live life very long at all, you pretty quickly learn that the real world isn't quite as you would envision it to be or hoped it would be. Everybody's heard Murphy's Law, right? If anything can go wrong, it will. There's some variations to that. The other line moves faster, regardless. And if you change lines, the other line still moves faster. How about this one? All papers that you save will never be needed until such time as you dispose of them. Then they become essential. When you're working on your car, any tool dropped will roll under the car to the car's geographic center. I've experienced that one. Or Murphy's Law is, if anything can go wrong, it will. A variation of that is Murphy was an optimist. So those are exaggerations, obviously, but we chuckle at them because there's a piece of them that kind of smack of reality. Things don't always go smooth in life, and they don't always go the way we hope they would, think they should, et cetera, et cetera. Even as followers of Christ, even as people who are wanting to be led by the Lord and wanting to serve Him and wanting to make a difference in their lives and engage in attempting to do that, even when we're convinced that we're on the right path, and we may be on the right path, it doesn't mean things will go smoothly. I mean, all I have to do is read the New Testament or the followers of Christ in the New Testament, and it's very obvious that following Christ can create all kinds of problems for you. It can create all kinds of stress and struggle. And so that's kind of the reality. Well, in Nehemiah, of course, is a man that God is using, and he's discovering this in life, that it isn't always just smooth and easy when you attempt to do what God wants you to do. So Nehemiah chapter 2. Now in chapter 1, we learned that Nehemiah is the cupbearer of the king of the Medo-Persian Empire at the time, in Artaxerxes, and they live in the winter palace at this point is in Susa, and that's where he's operating from. And he receives a report that the walls around the city of Jerusalem are still in shambles from being destroyed 100 some years earlier. Never been rebuilt. Temple's been rebuilt, but not the walls around the city. This disturbs him greatly. He's really, really troubled by this. Goes to prayer to the Lord about this this need. So we learned some things last week about when God's going to send you on a mission, and I'm not referring so much to a lifelong mission as much as a specific mission for a period of time in your life. He does some things to prep you for that, to help equip you and get you ready for that. And that's what we pointed out last week. Well, this week is chapter 2, and this is where Nehemiah kicks into gear, into action. Nehemiah 1, he gets a report, prays to God, spends 4 months in prayer about it. Nehemiah chapter 2, things start to happen. So, Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 of the text. We'll start off by looking at just reading those, give you the setting. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. Remember what a cupbearer does? He drinks a sip of the wine and he tastes the food. So, in case someone's trying to poison the king, he'll die and the king won't. So, that's his task. I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid. Now, what I want to do walking through this text, so that's the context, that's the situation we're in right now in chapter 2. I want to point out some, I'm calling them important qualities, so things that are really valuable to have in terms of God using you, in terms of serving the Lord. And I want, as I point these out, I want you just to think about yourself and kind of look at your own life and your own self and say, you know, where am I with these in my life? And let the Lord show you and teach you through that. So the first principle, and then we'll walk through this text a little more, is this. To serve God, we need to be conscious of His presence and dependent on Him. Conscious of His presence and dependent on Him. As we go on in the text, He says, I was very much afraid, verse 3, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven. Now, picture him in front of the king. The king asked, well, what do you want? You shared with me why you're downtrodden, why you're sad. What do you want? I'm pretty sure that Nehemiah didn't go to his knees and fold his hands and close his eyes and say, dear God, and have a long prayer. I'm pretty sure he just shot up a second prayer. It's just a two-second prayer in his mind and heart. Lord, help me, because I've got to answer this king. I need you to step in here. That's where I get this idea of him being aware that God is present. He's conscious that God is with him, that God is present. What did Jesus say in Matthew 28? We call it the Great Commission. All authority has been given to me. So here's what I want you to do. Go make disciples. And at the very end of that assignment, he says, and I will be with you always. I'm not going to bail on you. I'm not going to get sidetracked. I will be with you always. And Nehemiah was very aware of God's presence, very conscious that God was with him and God was here right now in this instant. And so he shot up a prayer to him, and the king responded in a very positive way. Verse 8, just jumping to verse 8, the last part of verse 8, when the king responded in a very positive way, Nehemiah didn't say, he didn't credit the king for that. He didn't credit himself for that. He simply said in the last part of verse 8, and because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. So he's very aware of God's presence and God at work. That is critical to us serving the Lord. It's critical that we're aware that he's in my life and he's present 24/7, and I can always turn to him, and I'm aware that he's working through me. Sometimes we don't feel like that. Sometimes we don't even see that. But it's very important to be aware of his presence in our lives. Proverbs 21:1. The king's heart is like a stream of water directed by the Lord. He guides it wherever he pleases, which is what he's doing with Artaxerxes right here. Hudson Taylor, a missionary years ago, he said this, it is possible to move men or people through God by prayer alone. And so these characteristics of being conscious of God's presence, let me give you some of those that I think indicate we are. So ask yourself, am I or am I not? These might help you discern that. Here's the first one. When we're conscious of God's presence, it prompts us to stay closely connected to him through prayer. In other words, we talk to him a lot. So here's my question for you to ponder for yourself. How often do I talk to God? Because when you're conscious of his presence, it will prompt you and encourage you to talk to him, to pray. That's what prayer is, right? It's talking to God. And so you talk to him throughout the day, throughout the week, when you're conscious of his presence in your life. You talk to him frequently. And when God does what God does in your life, you immediately recognize it's him doing something and you give him the credit, if you will. So one of the reasons why this is so important is because our human nature is to, I guess I could use the word ignore God, but forget God, get sidetracked from other things, and table God. And God is expressing that throughout the scriptures, but in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, he's very concerned about that with the Israelites. Right before they go into the land of Canaan, the promised land. Now, they've been in the desert for 40 years. A lot of the people died off. Now this new generation, if you will, ready to go into the promised land. And one of God's concerns is this very concern that they will forget him, that they won't be conscious of his presence in their life. They get preoccupied with everything else or comfortable with everything else. Look what the text says in Deuteronomy chapter 6. The Lord your God will soon bring you into the land he swore to give you when he made a vow to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So they're about to go in. This is a land with large, prosperous cities that you did not build. The houses will be richly stocked with goods you did not produce. You will draw water from cisterns you did not dig, and you will eat from vineyards and olive trees you did not plant. When you have eaten your fill in this land, be careful not to forget the Lord who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. Now let's apply that to us. say it this way to make a point. When I go home today, I do not need to pray to God for food. I just open the refrigerator. Okay? When I go home today, I do not need to pray to God for a place to live. I have a place to live. When I go home today, or when I get up tomorrow and go to work, I don't need to pray to God for clothes. I got a closet of clothes. What's my point? My point is, when we have all these things, however we obtain them, maybe through our own hard work, it's easy to forget God. It's easy to say, I don't need him. Not really. Not on a day-to-day basis. Sure, I might need him for some big thing, but I just don't need him all the time. And that's exactly what God's concerned about with the Israelites here, and that's exactly what Nehemiah demonstrates, how critical and important it is that we are conscious of his presence and the need for him, dependent upon him. So in the next point, when we are conscious of God's presence and dependent on him, we develop patience. See, when we're aware of God in our lives, we're tuned in to God in our lives, we talk to God, whether when you're at work, now maybe out loud, but maybe just in your mind. You share all your concerns and all your joys. You just, God's in your life, and he's a critical part of your life, and you chat with him all the time. You share whatever's on your mind and heart. When that happens, you develop patience because you're aware of his presence at such a level that he develops that patience in you. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience. That's right. And so if you're an impatient person, some of you might be, one of the keys to that is to develop this awareness, this consciousness that God's in my life and he's present 24/7 and he's with me right here, right now. So when you're in a situation where you might tend to blow up or be really impatient or whatever, God will develop your ability to be more patient because of that awareness of him in your life. Nehemiah demonstrates this, obviously, in chapter 1 with his 4 months of prayer before he even tries to do anything. He also demonstrates it in later in this chapter when he arrives in Jerusalem. Look what it says in verse 11 and 12. He shows up in Jerusalem now. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. Verse 13, by night I went through the valley gate toward the Jackal Well, etc., etc. He's assessing the wall and the condition of the wall. He shows up. Now, Nehemiah could have shown up, and on the very first day with his entourage and with his soldiers that came with him, he could have said, I've arrived, I'm here. In 1 hour, I want everybody to get together. I want to tell you my plan. But he didn't do that. He took a little time to assess the situation, and no doubt in prayer, with the awareness of God in his life, to assess what's going on and what God might want him to do and how God might want him to handle it. Here's another one I want you to see. When we're conscious of God's presence and dependent on him, we're enabled to develop his plan. He gives us the wisdom to deal with things. And he has a plan for your life. He has a plan for my life. To understand that if we're aware of his presence and we're connected with him and we're learning how to be dependent on him, patience is a huge piece of being dependent on him, then he helps us understand what he wants us to do. Maybe not 10 years from now, but right now. You know, I had a conversation with someone recently where I was sharing with them that my spiritual journey, that when I'm in the dark about stuff, that happens about once every other day, you know, when I'm trying to figure things out and I have a situation or whatever, or something I'm concerned about. When I'm in the dark, what I do is I back up and say, okay, I'm confused about this or I'm uncertain about this, but what am I not confused about? What do I know to be true? And I kind of remind myself of those things in terms of God and his character and his plan for my life and say, okay, I'm going to make sure I stay on track with those when I'm in the dark here. And then, of course, I asked God, I said, I'm in the dark, so whatever you want me to do, you better shed some light on it. And in the meantime, I'm going to focus on what I know. And Nehemiah was very patient, and he had plans. In verse 6, look what he says, the king, through interacting with the king. Then the king with the queen sitting beside him asked me, how long will your journey take, and when will you get back? It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. Nehemiah, okay, I hear you, and I'm probably going to allow this, but how long are you going to be gone? And he didn't say, well, I have no idea, I'm just going to trust God. Now, that would not be a bad response, although to the king it probably would be. But he had clearly thought about some stuff. And he had an understanding of some things. And he had some plans, ideas of plans in place. And so he said, well, I'm going to be gone X. We don't know what it was, but he said, I'm going to be gone this much time. In chapter 5 of this book, it shows that he was in Jerusalem for 12 years, Nehemiah. Now, what most scholars believe is he got done with the wall, went back to the king, and reported, and then the king allowed him to go back to Jerusalem to be a governor in that area over the Jews. So, he had a plan. That's my point. And God helps us see what he wants us to do if we're patient, if we're aware of his presence, if we're trusting and dependent on him as we go through life. Say, what do you want me to do? One of my daughters worked for a place we worked for, I don't know, 7 years. Not been an easy job. And we've had several conversations over the years about, well, why does God have you there? Notice our perspective. Why does God have you there? And, of course, I say to her as a father, well, you can't just quit. You just go find another job first, right? You just apply and let God open doors. So she and I kind of hit on a point about 3 years ago of God has me there to try to be a light in a dark place. Now, she still wants a different job. God has not seen fit to bring that to her. She's applied to places. This hasn't worked. But in the meantime, why does God still have me there? That's understanding God in your life, conscious awareness of his presence in your life, and he's working in your life as long as you're open to being led by him. So, Nehemiah demonstrated that. Look at what he did in verse 7 and 8 to the king. After the king said, well, what do you need? What do you want? How long are you going to be gone? Then Nehemiah says he has a plan. I also said to him, verse 7, if it pleases me, may I have letters of the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the king's forest, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy. So he had a plan. And God showed him or helped him understand a plan that would work for the mission that he gave him. That's my point. Praying and planning are not opposites. They're a combined effort. When you're aware of God's presence and you're learning to be dependent on him, it doesn't mean you don't make plans. There's a statement I've used over the years off and on. We write our plans in pencil and give God the eraser. Right? So when we do that, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, we're saying, here's what makes sense to me right now as I'm learning to be aware of your presence and depending on you. Here's what makes sense to me right now. Here's the eraser. If you want to change it, I'm fine with that. And that's this idea of prayer, dependence, and planning at the same time. And Nehemiah demonstrated that, I think, in some profound ways. Okay, to serve God, it's important that we're conscious of his presence. He's with us. We need to talk to him a lot. And learn how to be dependent on him every day of our lives and to share that with him. Next one, to serve God, we need to learn to work with a variety of people. We need to learn to work with people. It's kind of easy to be idealistic about serving God, maybe, until you run up against a person you got to serve beside or with, or you have a conflict with. Linus in the Peanuts cartoon series said this, I love mankind as people I can't stand. So if you're involved in people's lives, you will run across someone who rubs you the wrong way. This is the way it is. Learning to deal with that and learning to minister in the name of God, in the name of Christ, with a variety of people is a very valuable skill to develop. And if it's hard for you, that's where you just need to bring it to the Lord, right? Talk about being dependent on him. Talk about being conscious of his presence. And Lord, help me with this. Let me give you three kinds of people that Nehemiah demonstrated in chapter 2 he dealt with. The first is you need to learn to work with unbelieving people. I think that's actually pretty, I don't know if the word easy, but you certainly have that in your life. virtually all of us have people in our lives that we work alongside or know and interact with that are unbelievers. But the ability to work with them in a positive way, in a grace-filled way, is so vital. Again, I go back to my daughter and her workspace, some of the struggles there, some of the people that she's had to work with. And we've had conversations about, well, as a follower of Christ, what do you do with this? How do you conduct yourself? How do you respond to this kind of thing? And so it's a lifelong learning thing to work with people that are far from God and don't even try to follow God, unbelievers. And Nehemiah did that with the king. The king was not a believer in God, Yahweh. And Nehemiah was able to work with the king and present his case and get a response from the king. What's interesting about this is the same king that stopped the work on the wall 2 years back. We learned that in Ezra. So Nehemiah is coming to this king, asking for him to do something that the king said should not be done. And you can imagine how Nehemiah felt internally and how he struggled with, Lord, you're going to have to do this through me. Because the Medo-Persian Empire, the king, it was a tradition among that that when the king set down an edict, it couldn't be changed. So this was a serious uphill battle in that sense. But Nehemiah attacked that battle by first 4 months of prayer because he knew how difficult this could be to actually be able to deal with this issue and let the king, have the king allow him. So also, the king respected Nehemiah. What you didn't notice that when Nehemiah said, okay, I'm going to be gone, the king said, well, for how long? In other words, I want you back. I like you. You're a good employee. You're honest. You're a person of integrity. I trust you. So I want you back. And because of Nehemiah's character, because at his job he was so confident and had such character of integrity, the boss wanted him back. And because of that, it opened the door. The boss was much more willing to listen to what he had to say and respond to him. So learn to be that kind of person with people who are far from God. Boss, co-worker, neighbor, whatever it might be. That even if they're far from God, they at least look at you and say, now there's a person of integrity. There's a person, if I had to trust them, I could trust them. That kind of thing. Learn to encourage demoralized people. Be an encourager. Nehemiah showed up in Jerusalem, and although the Jewish people knew that the wall needed to be built, they had gone for years without even trying because they tried once, and they failed. I'll put it that way. At least I think they probably felt like they failed because they didn't do it. That's going to happen to us. If we're engaged in trying to serve the Lord and try to make a difference in His kingdom for Him, and we're living in aware of His conscious presence, we're conscious of His presence, and we're learning how to be dependent, and we're making plans, and we're trusting Him to lead and guide us, there will be times when we feel like we failed. And from a human perspective, maybe it looks like we did. And that's what happened to them, so they were demoralized. They weren't trying to rebuild the wall again. They'd kind of given up on it. He comes along, Nehemiah comes along, and instead of showing up with his entourage and saying, okay, I'm going to do this, he kind of figures out a way to help them get on board, help them understand the vision and the plan, and say, this is from God, I believe, and let's think this through together, and help them have some hope. And verse 17, he states the problem very plainly, which I love about that. He encourages them, but he doesn't sidestep the issue. In verse 17, he says this, then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. And so he doesn't sidestep the issue, but he does it in a way that says, come on, let's do this together. He says, notice, we need to do this. He didn't point his finger at them and say, shame on you. He just said, we need to do this together. And he encouraged them in that way. And we'll no longer be in disgrace. It says, hey, I'm in this with you, and look at our situation. We need to think this through and move forward in a way that I believe God wants us. So let me explain to you what that is. In verse 18, he goes on in verse 18, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me. He said, look what the king has done, allowing me to come. We got the timber lined up, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was a great encouragement. So they responded with, let's do it. Let's rebuild. Look what it says in Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. Okay, let's stop for a second. When's the last time you did that? Here's what the text says. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. When's the last time you put any mental energy into saying, before God and self, how can I help others get motivated to serve you, to love and good deeds? What can I do to encourage other people that are around me, friends, family, whatever, in that direction? So that's what the text says. Then it goes on and says, and let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another. And Nehemiah was very successful at doing that at that moment with that mission, coming back to the people, rallying the troops together and saying, hey, here's, let me share with you my vision, what God has given me, what's on my heart. And they rallied around and said, we're with you now. We hear you, we see you, and we got the same desire. So, in serving God, the qualities of serving God, work with unbelievers is important, right? Demoralize people, be an encourager. And the last one, as far as people goes, learn to effectively deal with people that try to stop us from our mission. And that's going to happen. And there's a list here in verse 19 and 20 of people. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. What is this you are doing, they asked. Are you rebelling against the king? Verse 20, I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding, but as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. So, you have these people opposing. And he stood up to them at that point. Very clear understanding of God's mission at that point. Understood rebuilding the walls, what God wanted him to do, along with the people around him. And the enemy came in and said, hey, how dare you do this? Of course, they were threatened by the possibility of Jerusalem and that region, the Jews becoming more powerful again and establishing their own nation, if you will. And they didn't want that to happen. But my point is, that he was willing to stand up for truth, stand up for God, if you will, stand up for what's right, what God wants him to do, and not get sidetracked by all the people who tried to stop him. So, first one, these big picture ones I'm giving you. Be conscious of his presence and be dependent on him. Learn to work with a variety of people. And third one is learn to deal with problems. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Learn to deal with the problems. Nehemiah did that very, very effectively. Came and looked at the wall, realized what needed to be done. Here's the problem, stated it very clearly. And we need to do that too. We need to deal with the problems, not put our head in the sand, not be an ostrich, but just understand the problems that come our way. Say, okay, Lord, how do you want me to deal with it? I'm not going to pretend it isn't there, but how do you want me to deal with it? John chapter 16, Jesus says, in this world, you will have trouble. In this world, you're going to have problems. In this world, you're going to have heartache. In this world, you're going to have issues. That's what this world is. That's what it's part of, what it's made up of. And you're going to have it. Ephesians chapter 6 tells us that we as followers of Christ are in a war. We're in a battle. I would imagine there's fear if you're a soldier in a war and people are shooting at you, but you're not surprised if they're shooting at you. You've been told you're in a war. You've been told now you're going to the front lines. And you understand that when you're in a war, people are going to shoot at you. Well, we're in a war. When it comes to being followers of Christ, we're in a war. And there will be times when people will shoot at us, whatever that is. They'll shoot at you when you're attempting to serve, attempting to make a difference for God, attempting to follow him. People will shoot at you. Just be aware of that and be honest about that and deal with that before the Lord and with others. Okay, Brother Lawrence. I don't know if you know the story of Brother Lawrence. He was a Frenchman who became a monk after being in the military for a little while. And he was in a monastery. This was in the 1600s, a monastery. And he was on the kitchen crew. For most of his adult life, he lived in a monastery and was in the kitchen doing things. But his claim to fame, if you want to put it that way, in Christian circles, a book that was published that he didn't publish, but a book that was published about him called Practicing the Presence of God. And in that, the material for that book came from writings that he did, private writings. He didn't try to publish them, pass them out, or anything. He just journaled and wrote over years about what it means to live in the presence of God. What does it look like to be conscious of God's presence in your life? And all he was a kitchen cook. That's all he did. It wasn't like he did some wonderful thing that we splicey think. And yet, it's fascinating to read that little booklet. And him talking about what it means to wash pots and pans and to mop floors every day and to cook food and to clean up after others and be in the presence of God while doing it. And I just want to encourage us, if there's one thing about this whole thing that I would want you to take seriously is this first principle, conscious of God's presence and being dependent on Him for my life. And one of the most powerful indicators of that in your life is that He's on your mind and He's on your lips. So I want to close by asking you this question. When's the last time you look back on this past week? How often was God on your mind and on your lips? I don't mean out loud lips, but just in terms of conversation with Him. Because the more He's on our mind, the more He's on our lips, the more we're aware of His presence in our life, the more we're going to learn to be dependent on Him, and the more we're going to be able to be used with Him and service for Him. Maybe it's cooking food. Maybe it's working in the kitchen. That's not the thing. But it's whatever it is. How often is God on your mind and on your lips? Brother Andrew, in some of his journaling that they put in this book, talks about working at that initially in his life as a monk. The discipline. He had to practice it. He had to consciously decide, okay, I'm going to try to do this. He said after a while, and it wasn't like a month, it was like, I think, several years, it became second nature for him to have God on his mind and on his lips. I would love for that to be for us. But it just doesn't happen by snapping your fingers. It's something you decide, I want that for me. I want to be a child of God that has God on my mind and on my lips often. I don't want to walk through a week and only think about God once or twice. I want to think about God frequently every day. I go to work and you have things you've got to focus on. You focus on, but even when you focus on things at work, you have the ability to be aware of God's presence and to shoot up little comments or prayers or whatever it might be in your mind and heart. God on your mind and God on your lips as we walk through life. If that happens, if we develop that, that's part of who we are. It opens us up to so many ways in which God can use us and minister to us and through us to others as we learn to be aware of Him and dependent on Him and then be used with Him. Amen? Let's have a prayer together. Father, I want to ask that you help us with this. I know you said in the New Testament that one of the struggles we have is how easy it is to get so preoccupied with all the stuff in life, and we got to deal with it, that we actually kind of lose sight and lose sense of you. And I just pray for us that you can help us with that. I would love for us to be the kind of followers of you that when we come here on Sunday mornings, we've been so much talking to you and walking with you, fellowshipping with you and worshiping you, it's just second nature for us. And this is just kind of an added bonus. I would love for that to be who we are. And for that to happen, we really do need you to do that work in us. Help us open ourselves up to that. Help us to want that in our lives, to seek you for it, and for you to work in us so that we as your kids can experience you in such a profound personal way. And then, of course, our lives can bring you such great honor as we reach out and serve you and as you use us and minister to us to others. Again, Lord, I pray for every one of